Drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
Welcome.
Mama says
this is Dr. Steve Nurse. And this is our next series of Is Abled, and it's a series on dementia and Alzheimer's. And what we would like to do here is let you know what you need to know about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The series is 6 episodes, and we will discuss both dementia and Alzheimer's disease. The main person interviewed is Brad Tyson. Dr. Brad Tyson has been a clinical neuropsychologist since 2014 and specializes in cognitive assessment. He has clinical and research interests in dementia, traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, epilepsy, substance abuse, chronic pain, and general medical disorders associated with cognitive impairment. He was trained in neuropsychology and neuroimaging research at Dartmouth Medical Center in New Hampshire. He currently works for the Eastside Neuroscience Institute at Evergreen and Overlake Medical Centers. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our second episode on dementia and Alzheimer's. And again, our speaker is Dr. Brad Tyson. And I really learned a lot from our first episode myself. I've learned that determining dementia and Alzheimer's is not an easy thing. You cannot take that test with 10 questions and determine it. And as Brad was saying, it involves lots of different facets, looking at history, looking at medications, and all those kinds of things. And so with this episode 2, we'd like to go into the different types of dementia. And Brad, you're the expert. I'm going to give it over to you. Okay. And talk about the different types of dementia and Alzheimer's, and then I may have some questions. Remember, there is no stupid question, so that's important.
There might be. thanks again, Steve, for having me. So, you know, it would take a long time to cover all the different forms of dementia. I'll focus on some of the most common, and as I said in the first episode, you know, Alzheimer's disease is the most common and the most well-known form of dementia.
And who is Alzheimer? Do you know who
he is? Yeah, he's a German neurologist who had a patient in the early 1900s named Augusta D, who developed memory loss and behavioral problems. And he described it as a new entity. And once she died, he did an autopsy on her brain and found what we know now is the characteristic pathology of Alzheimer's disease, which is amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. And so then the disease now bears his name.
And so as I recall, what they do is they do almost slices of the brain in the autopsy and determine if these if this plaque is in the brain. Is that correct?
they primarily do slices of the hippocampus, which is the short-term memory center in the middle of the brain, which is Latin for seahorse. So when you cut it,
it kind of
has a swirl in it. I mean, it doesn't really look like a hippocampus or like a seahorse.
But it's always fun to know why they name things.
Yeah. Well, you know, neuroanatomists are, at least, you know, long ago when all these names were made, were a lonely group, it seems, because there's a lot of very inappropriate sexual references in a lot of the neuroanatomical structures, which is amusing, of course.
So,
Alzheimer's disease is found in about 60 to 80% of dementia cases at autopsy. And as I mentioned last time, the most significant risk factor for Alzheimer's disease is age. So the older you get, the more likely you get it. And as it stands now, about 50% of people 85 or older have Alzheimer's disease or some form of dementia.
But different levels, or it affect them differently?
So I should also make a distinction between Alzheimer's disease and Alzheimer's dementia. So, I mean, you can certainly have Alzheimer's disease. You can have the pathology of Alzheimer's disease in your brain, and many people do, you know. But what you need to have dementia, which is the clinical syndrome of Alzheimer's disease, is primarily short-term memory loss. And there's other forms of Alzheimer's disease that are characterized by different, you know, areas of cognitive decline. But for the most part, classic Alzheimer's disease is short-term memory loss. And then vascular dementia is the next most common cause of dementia, accounting for maybe 20% of dementia cases, followed by dementia with Lewy bodies and Parkinson's disease dementia. These are disorders with very similar pathology and sort of clinical expression.
When you say vascular, that's the veins and stuff, is it?
Stroke-related dementia is another way you could say that, yeah. And then the spectrum of frontal temporal lobe dementia and alcohol-related dementias each account for maybe 5%, maybe 10% of dementia cases. And mixed pathologies are very common, particularly in elderly individuals. I mean, the older you get, the more likely you have multiple pathologies at the same time. And even in cases that are diagnosed clinically as Alzheimer's disease, you typically see vascular pathology in the brain. And at autopsy, you might see, you know, alpha-synuclein, you know, part of dementia with Lewy bodies.
And talk a little bit about that. What are Lewy bodies? Because I had a friend my age that died when she was 65.
Yeah.
And it seemed like she had this Lewy bodies dementia. And it seems like it came on very fast with her.
Yeah.
Like within a year, she had really declined.
Yeah, so it has to do with the abnormal accumulation of a protein called alpha-synuclein. And as they sort of glom on together, they kill brain cells. And as they sort of aggregate into bigger groups, they're called Lewy bodies. Yeah. And so you see, I mean, there's a huge correspondence between Alzheimer's disease and Lewy body dementia. You see, you know, that dual pathology quite a bit. And in fact, I should back up and say, actually, the most common form of dementia is not Alzheimer's disease by itself, but a mixed Alzheimer's vascular pathology. And things like, you know, vascular risk factors like hypertension and having a coronary artery bypass, right, are significant risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. So there's a lot of interplay there. Yeah.
So now they do bypasses pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty regularly. I mean, I know a lot of people who are quite a bit younger than me that have had, you know, they have. And again, even related to the Vietnam thing, one person that has had a number of things from Agent Orange has had
common cause of Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
And implicated, at least.
And has also, they related his issue with having the bypass. Mm-hmm. And a lot of, plaque in the veins and things associated with that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, getting back to sort of diagnosis of dementia, an accurate diagnosis requires that all reversible factors or causes of cognitive difficulties or decline are identified and addressed. So, like, common treatable causes of cognitive decline in older adults include depression, as we talked about last time, abnormal thyroid function, sleep apnea, nutritional deficiencies, other unidentified or untreated medical disorders and medications with cognitive side effects. So almost, 10% of people with dementia have some of these reversible causes. And so, you know, that's one thing that I want to identify with my evaluation. Are there reversible causes or treatable causes of cognitive decline that we can address? And if we address those things, how much does cognition improve? And, you know, many times somebody will look like they have Alzheimer's disease, particularly people with sleep apnea. You treat the sleep apnea and their memory improves. So, you know, if you have memory loss and you're concerned about it, make sure you bring it up with your doc. Because the sooner you can identify either the possibility of dementia or these other potential causes, the sooner and more effectively you can remedy them.
And sleep apnea is, I know what, you know, it's somehow your system just kind of shuts down and you may stop breathing. Is that?
Yeah, so it's a disorder of sleep. And when you fall asleep, you know, your brain puts on automatic, you know, programs for breathing. And sometimes those programs are dysfunctional, or you could have a obstructive sleep apnea where there's some obstruction affecting how much oxygen you get to the brain. And so that's why I know a lot about sleep apnea, is because this reduction in oxygen, you know, over the course of time really affects memory. The hippocampus structure that I was talking about is really, really sensitive to things like stress and to things like lack of oxygen, among other things. So that's why stress is a big risk factor for cognitive decline. And that's why sleep apnea, I mean, fortunately with sleep apnea, if you get it treated, memory often improves. Sleep often improves. And people, you know, and I can understand this, don't want to wear a mask, let's say, which is one of the treatments for sleep apnea. But when people do, they commonly come back to me and say, oh my God, you know, I have less fatigue, I'm sleeping better, and my memory's much better. And we can see that psychometrically as well.
I feel like saying, have you heard about Inspire? You know, that's the one that they advertise now that...
Yeah.
I think what they must do is put some kind of a little, like a dog collar on you, a shock system or something.
I don't know the specifics of Inspire.
When you start to go to sleep, it wakes you up.
I mean, there's other treatments for sleep apnea that don't require wearing a mask, but yeah.
I just, when I start to snore, my wife just hits me in the ribs, and that, you know, tends to wake me up.
Well, most people with sleep apnea don't know they have it, right, because they're asleep, and they don't know that they're not breathing.
Yeah.
It's usually the spouse or whoever's sleeping with them that says
a little off, but it's interesting, some of those things that we think are automatic in our system.
Yeah.
Now my spinal cord injury is high enough that I cannot sweat.
Mm-hmm.
Sweating is not a normal thing, so
yeah.
I have to be very careful when I get very cold or get especially get very hot.
Mm-hmm.
Because when, I mean, I've been out when it's been really hot, and I've just literally had to throw ice over my head just to...
So you don't sweat on your face either?
No.
Oh, wow.
No, no, not a bit. So.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
So...
Where were we? Yes.
Sorry for that digression.
No, that's my fault. Yeah,
so maybe, and I think I briefly touched on this, I'd talk about the workup for dementia, and that typically includes a detailed history obtained from the patient and a knowledgeable informant, usually a family member, a neurological examination, brain imaging, appropriate lab studies, and neuropsychological assessment. And, you know, different dementias can be associated with relatively distinctive clinical presentations, including differential patterns of cognitive decline, particularly early in the course, and specific structural and functional brain imaging abnormalities. So let me take the different forms of dementia maybe in a little bit more detail here.
Sure,
So we'll start with Alzheimer's disease. The clinical sort of presentation of Alzheimer's disease is a very gradual onset and progression of short-term memory loss. The classic Alzheimer's disease, there's other forms. And it's often the only symptom that you see in early Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, which is difficult because everybody's memory, as I mentioned, you know, last time, everybody's memory declines as you get older.
Right.
So how do you know, if it's right. If it's more than age related, and that requires a neuropsych assessment.
And it's interesting how the mind works, too, because I, you know, there'll be sometimes I'll be trying to think of a name.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm 75, be trying to think of a name and have no clue. And then all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah.
Pops up.
Let me reassure your listeners that trouble finding names is so commonplace that
yes.
a patient tells me that I want to know about other things and
I
not
agree.
So much.
I agree with that, Bart. I mean, Brad. Yes.
So as I talked about, Alzheimer's is characterized by this pathological buildup of amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles, and we now have drugs that can clear amyloid plaque from the brain. We can talk about that. They're
sure.
anti-amyloid monoclonal antibodies. So.
And you were saying that, but when you take some of these drugs, there's lots of side effects too.
Yeah, I think they're not quite there yet. But this is a revolution, right? I mean, we haven't had any Alzheimer's therapeutics since the late 90s, Aricept, which was approved 25 years ago. And now we have, three or four, new drugs since 2021, I think.
And they really don't, they don't really back up the dementia, do they? I mean, but they may slow it up, or is...
Yeah, I mean, the big controversy with these drugs at this point is that they tend to remove the amyloid plaque from the brain. So they remove one of the constituent components of Alzheimer's disease, but they don't improve memory so much. And so it's like, well, who cares? What we really want to do is we want to improve memory. We want to get somebody, back to what they were before or better if we could.
We want to take a pill.
We want to take a pill.
We want to take a pill and have everything yeah. be okay. And that's why I see with so many of the kids that I work with that are in special ed, it's the same mm-hmm. situation.
Yeah.
We've got a kid with a Down syndrome.
Uh-huh.
And parents work with the kid. They work with the kid. They get every kind of thing that they possibly can. But at about sixth grade, no matter what you're going to do, there is going to be some cognitive delay.
Well, and interesting, I don't know if you are aware of this when you brought that up, but there's a big correlation between Down syndrome and Alzheimer's disease. And there's some overlap in some of the genetic features of the two disorders. So people with Down syndrome commonly get Alzheimer's disease quite early in life. Let me cover the other sort of forms of dementia really quick. So
sure.
vascular dementia, as we talked about, is preceded by stroke, either one large stroke or lots of little strokes, has a wide range of cognitive, mood, and behavioral symptoms, depending on, the type and location of stroke. If there is a defining cognitive feature of that, I would say it's probably slower processing speed.
And aren't there different, aren't there, like when you have strokes, aren't there some people that have small strokes?
Everybody does.
Isn't there,
long enough, you're going to have some small vessel ischemic disease, and that's just, the smallest blood vessels in the brain that sort of dry up or get blocked off. And over time, this is probably what slows down processing speed as everybody gets older, is these sort of vascular changes
in
the brain.
Is that kind of what happened when this, who was it, the senator, kind of blacked out for... 20 seconds?
I don't know what that was. I have it down to probably two things. Maybe he has a form of vascular dementia
lack of blood to the brain, something like that?
Yeah, it's something called cerebral amyloid angiopathy, which you have these things called amyloid spells. But I think more likely it's a seizure that he's having. But
but
it's a neurological event that is concerning that something else is going on.
Yeah.
Pretty significant at his age. I don't know how old he is, but I think he's 80-something. So.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I'm sorry I interrupted again, but go ahead.
It's fine. Yeah. So Parkinson's disease and dementia with Lewy bodies, these are diseases characterized by the pathological buildup of alpha-synuclein, as I mentioned earlier. And they're characterized by specific movement abnormalities like tremor or bradykinesia, so slow movement, rigidity, characteristic, gait changes. And pathologically, these diseases are very similar. The main difference is that Parkinson's disease starts off as a movement disorder and then progresses to dementia. And usually over the course of 5 or 10 years, sometimes more, in about 75% of cases, whereas dementia with Lewy bodies begins with dementia, or dementia and movement abnormalities begin around the same time. And there's some interesting features of both of these in that sometimes the cognitive decline is preceded, or even the motor symptoms are preceded by symptoms like loss of smell or acting out dreams or small cramped handwriting, known as micrographia.
Wow.
And I should also mention that there's a plethora of different diseases that are associated with Parkinsonism.
Even with the Parkinson disease, my friend who had that started with kind of a dropped foot, or he, you know, kind of started stumbling.
Shuffled steps. So frontotemporal dementia is a spectrum of different but similar forms of dementia, very often earlier in onset, like 50s or 60s. And the two main forms of frontotemporal dementia involve significant behavior change, so-called behavioral variant frontotemporal dementia. It's a devastating disease that causes an individual's personality to change drastically.
So they could be very, like, aggressive or...
Or extremely inappropriate socially. And then there's the language variant frontotemporal dementia, also known as primary progressive aphasia, which, as the name implies, is, you know, progressively impacts the ability to speak.
And language.
This is what Bruce Willis has, as we talked about. Alcohol-related dementia is worth noting. The research on how alcohol affects the brain has been mixed, I think, until fairly recently, where the research really supports that no amount of alcohol is really good for the brain. Alcohol is a neurotoxin. But to get alcohol-related dementia, I mean, you really have to be drinking. what really devastates the brain is alcohol withdrawal or malnutrition. So somebody's drinking all the time, a lot, and then they stop all of a sudden. Or if alcohol is their main form of nutrition, right, they'll get, you know, different vitamin B1 deficiencies and things that can really devastate the brain,
like,
as well.
Like in the movie, was it Leaving Las Vegas
Nick Cage,
Where he just pretty much, all he does is drink alcohol, you know.
And I think we mentioned this last episode, maybe. You can have dementia due to traumatic brain injury. Repeated traumatic brain injury or, you know, a severe traumatic brain injury. And it's really kind of interesting, you know, you can have different forms of this chronic traumatic encephalopathy, right? So boxers get slightly different form of dementia than football players. And it has to do with the biomechanics of the head injury. And where boxers commonly get hit, their neck twists, and it twists on the brainstem. And in the brainstem, there is... a strip of neurons called the substantia nigra, which is the black substance. And that black substance is dopamine. And so in Parkinson's disease, this structure degenerates on its own. In chronic traumatic encephalopathy due to boxing, your brainstem twists, right? And it shears these cells and you get Parkinsonism that way. And so it's a different mechanism, but it's a similar sort of
like Muhammad Ali.
And, you know, interesting about, I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but interestingly, I do have one conspiracy theory, and you know, Muhammad Ali had the best neurologists, of course, and they all said that he had Parkinson's disease. My conspiracy theory is that he didn't. He had chronic traumatic encephalopathy, but he didn't want anyone to know that. And so that was sort of what was put out there in the public. He didn't want anyone to know that he got it from boxing.
That's it. So, yeah. So he didn't want anybody to think that he had Parkinson's from getting hit too many times in the head.
Right. And with football players, you know, they are, you know, especially linemen, right? All throughout the game, they're just smashing their heads against each other. And what you get is you get the frontal lobe and the temporal lobes smashing up against the bony protuberances of the skull, which can cause shearing and can cause contusion and can cause, you know, programmed cell death that comes on after they're done playing football. And these parts of the brain are really involved in personality and appropriate social function. And so you can get something like a very, you know, drastic change in personality and in aggression and suicidality.
Well, look at this. Who am I thinking about this? football player who wound up killing himself in prison, but he also had been charged with murder of several other people, and they apparently did some studies on his brain. You know, he was a lineman, and did the studies on the brain.
Are you talking about Aaron Hernandez?
Yeah,
and he was young.
Yeah. And that may have been caused by some of that trauma.
Someone who comes to mind is Junior Seau, who you know was a fantastic linebacker.
Yeah.
And you know he drove his car off a cliff. You know we don't know why he did that. You know, a rich guy and very well respected guy and loved guy in the community, and you know took his life.
And that's another thing. Maybe that's the next thing we should talk about, because you know, it's so easy to look at someone else and say, gosh, if I had that kind of money and, Freddie Prinze Jr., I mean, a million of those, you know, there's nothing that makes you immune from having depression and those kinds of issues. But, there's almost more questions that we don't know about dementia.
There's a lot of unknown, which makes it an exciting area of research and clinical practice.
Talk about Prevagen. We've got about 2 minutes here.
I mean, people come in and ask me about Prevagen all the time. And you may have seen the commercials with the floating, you know, jellyfish, I think it is. So Prevagen there's been two studies done on Prevagen that I'm aware of. And the first thing that should put you on guard is that the studies were funded by the company that makes the drug.
Right.
Blind maybe studies. A conflict of interest there. And they're not placebo controlled. So, you know what placebo effects are, right? If you give someone a drug and you say, you know, we're going to test this drug and see if it improves your memory. Well, your memory may improve because you think it's going to improve.
Yeah, 30 to 40%.
Something like 30% of medication effects
can be
explained by placebo. But one study showed no significant difference between people who took Prevagen and people who didn't, and the other study showed a very slight improvement in memory that wasn't statistically significant. And this thing, you know, I see this thing in the store. It's like $50. And there's really no support for it whatsoever. We can talk about supplements and things. There's not really any good supplements. But another one that people talk to me about a lot is Focus Factor. And it's something that you can buy. I think it's at Costco. And it probably does help. But it's got a lot of caffeine and vitamins in it. Sure. So that's what's helping you.
Let's talk about that in the next episode.
Certainly.
Because I think there's certainly a lot of things that you know, we know, I mean, it's like we talk about carrots, give you good eyesight. Well, it won't prevent blindness, but we know that there are, so anyhow, more exciting things to study, and we're going to let her go from here. And thank you, folks, for listening to us, and thank you, Brad, for being here.
My pleasure.
And we'll see you in episode 3.
Drive a Chevy 'cause he drove Chevys. Like him, I'm a baseball fan. I'm going back to see him while he still knows who I am.
This is Dr. Steve Nurse, and I want to thank everybody for listening to our series on dementia and Alzheimer's disease on Voice of Vashon, the Dynamo of Washington. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
While he still knows who I am. This time I'm gonna hug him. instead of just shaking hands. Gonna tell him that I'm